Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 16, Number 3. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was insulin, the anabolic hormone. Insulin is crucial to the transport of glucose and amino acids into muscle cells. Properly managed by the right diet, insulin is the athlete's best friend because it's a major player in muscle hypertrophy. In other words, it's a key player in muscle remodeling and growth. However, insulin is a two-edged sword. It's also the hormone of feasting. And depending upon what you eat and when, insulin can also function as an incredibly efficient fat storage hormone. Our ability to respond to insulin is called insulin tolerance. Can you tolerate loud noise? Like if I took a noise machine and put it right up to your ear and turned it on, would that bother you? Now, if that wouldn't bother you, your hearing's definitely damaged. Because if your hearing is really sensitive, doesn't take a lot of noise to sort of bother you. And so this analogy is also true with insulin. The more tolerance we have for insulin, the more insulin it takes to get a response. So here's a take home. The less insulin we need to get the job done, the better. Insulin resistance involves the release by the pancreas of more insulin than the target cells in the body can handle. Eventually, the cell receptors of muscle and vital organs become saturated, non-responsive, and may even shut down. Over time, glucose and insulin accumulate to toxic levels in the bloodstream, causing damage throughout the entire body. Nutrients that optimize insulin activity, improve its sensitivity, and protect it from oxidative damage include B6, magnesium, chromium, vanadium, alpha-lipoic acid, vitamin C, and the omega-3 fatty acids. My topic on this edition of Clinical Review is glucagon, the anti-insulin hormone. Glucagon is the hormone that normally dominates our metabolism when we're fasting or when we eat fat and protein. It commands the body to make energy in the form of glucose from fat and protein. Glucagon has the opposite effect of insulin. Unlike insulin, glucagon increases blood sugar, whereas insulin decreases blood sugar. Referred to as the anti-insulin hormone, glucagon generates two major effects. It targets the liver and accelerates the conversion of glycogen into glucose via glycogenolysis. So that's the breakdown of glycogen in the muscle and in the liver into smaller units of glucose, which then can be utilized directly by the cell and then converted into ATP. Next, we know that glucagon can convert fatty acids from body stores or dietary fats into ketones. Ketone bodies are substances produced during triglyceride breakdown. Triglycerides are fats. And this typically occurs on a very low-carb diet or a ketogenic diet. Secretion of glucagon by the alpha cells of the pancreas is stimulated by amino acids but suppressed by ingested sugars. Any meal that provides a decent portion of protein or that is dominated by protein tends to raise the amino acid level of the blood and thereby stimulate glucagon activity. A big plate of pasta does not qualify. That's not going to work. Blood glucose levels directly control glucagon secretion via a negative feedback system. Physical exercise here is a plus. It also enhances glucagon release as continuous motion, as in aerobic activity, for example, and repeated muscle contraction lower blood sugar. This is one of the great attributes of regular movement and exercise. Insulin and glucagon form an important hormonal axis with totally opposite physiological effects, but they are both equal partners in the management of glucose and energy exchange. A steady flow of glucagon release throughout the day helps the body oxidize fat as a fuel source and inhibit fat storage. But excess glucagon, and there's always an extreme, can induce a catabolic effect on lean mass. You can lose bone and muscle. And it can even cause hyperglycemia. Hyperglycemia, of course, is high blood sugar. A healthy, steady trickle of insulin throughout the day with no large influxes, except perhaps after a workout when that athlete's window is wide open. This ensures a constant release of glucagon. And how do we do this? Well, this is achieved by consuming high-quality proteins throughout the day, maintaining a positive nitrogen balance, consuming low glycemic index carbohydrates, high quality natural carbohydrates, and healthy fats. You got to bring those fats in. They're totally essential. And this is all done on a routine and frequent basis. It's the consistency of the diet that counts. Glucagon inhibits the action of the fat storing enzymes acetyl-CoA carboxylase and lipoprotein lipase. So it inhibits these enzymes. Fats may be transported to contracting muscle fibers for use of energy, but only if glycogen, which is the stored form of sugar in the body, is depleted and not too abundant. So levels of glycogen have to be low. Now, this is the notion behind a low-carb diet, because if you eat very few carbs, your levels of glycogen are going to be relatively low. The balance here is just the right amount of carbs, fats, and proteins so that the whole thing is like operating at maximum efficiency. Glucagon minimizes glycogen storage, which in turn speeds up the body's ability to oxidize fat as fuel. The advantage of low-carb diets is that you can keep the body in a continuous fat-burning mode. The disadvantage is that glycogen storage is greatly reduced, which can, in some cases, with some athletes, affect performance, especially endurance-related activity like 5, 10K or marathons or events that require you to pull from inside. Recovery from intense exercise can be more challenging when glycogen storage is low, especially when you first start and you're on this kind of low-carb diet. You might feel less motivated. Your muscles tend to be flatter in appearance. And some people feel hungry all the time because they're used to that sugar rush of a high-carb meal. And that's gone. So you don't get that rush anymore. But at the same time, you're getting leaner and your gut's getting tighter. Delta-5 desaturase and HMG-CoA reductase, couple of enzymes here, they're both also inhibited by glucagon. Now, this is a good thing because reducing carbs and consuming high-quality protein reduces cholesterol, especially if it's elevated and it's oxidized and a large percentage of it is LDL. This is good to reduce that. And also overall triglyceride levels in the blood. If they're too high, that's a risk factor for heart disease and stroke. So we want to get that down. And this is what a low-carb diet can do. Also, inflammation tends to subside. And bowel function often improves when glucagon is being released. Now, the opposite of hyperglycemia is hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar. Symptoms of low blood sugar or hypoglycemia include confusion, dizziness, difficulty with speech, headache, hunger, lightheadedness, nauseousness, nervousness, and a feeling of being unsteady or shaky, and then even sweating. So there's people that have these symptoms, they don't know what's causing it, and often if they have a glucose tolerance test, which is a test you need to go and connect with your doctor on, we can establish the fact that you lack stability and that you actually do have a clinical form of hypoglycemia. And you need to address this because you're never going to get better if you don't. Now, some people experience hypoglycemia in their sleep. They're not able to manage their blood sugar well for a lot of different reasons. Now, this is called nocturnal hypoglycemia, and it can cause nightmares. or night sweats. So if you're getting these symptoms, suspect possible hypoglycemia. Hypoglycemia is typically treated by the masses with a sugary snack, drink, or glucose tablet. This will bring blood sugar back up to normal quickly, but it does not fix the underlying problem. You can't treat a sugar problem with sugar. That's not how it works. Generally speaking, people with type 1 diabetes are at higher risk for severe hypoglycemia, but you can also get it if you have type 2 diabetes, far more common, and also take insulin. It's certainly important for all people with any form of diabetes to monitor their blood sugar. But it's also really important for all of us being those that don't have diabetes, okay? So I don't have diabetes, so therefore I don't care, it doesn't matter. Yes, it does. We've got to understand that a diet rich in sweets, alcohol, and high glycemic refined grains, these are all a forerunner to silent inflammation, obesity, blood sugar instability, hyperinsulinemia, which is elevated levels of insulin in the blood, and type 2 diabetes. So all of this stuff isn't good, and it can all be prevented with diet and exercise. In the same way that insulin can be injected to treat diabetes type 1, glucagon can also be injected to treat severe hypoglycemia. So on occasion, doctors will prescribe an emergency glucagon kit to diabetics. You know, we all know that people shoot insulin. We don't think twice about it. But when's the last time you thought of anyone shooting glucagon? Well, it's common in this area. Most diabetics know about it because they have these kits. The kit actually contains pure glucagon powder and a syringe filled with liquid. You combine the two and then you shoot yourself up with it. But this is only used in cases of emergency. For example, if someone with diabetes faints or passes out, glucagon can be administered by injection right on the spot to boost their blood sugar levels. And this will pull them out of their coma and of their unconscious state. Now, that procedure of actually helping someone that's laying there on the floor and you need to inject them, it can be somewhat daunting. Plus, the side effects aren't cool. They include typically nauseousness and vomiting. Kind of gross, but I guess it's better than dying as a result of the diabetic-induced coma. Now, glucagon can also be taken through the nose. This is the form I would prefer. Intranasal glucagon can be administered via a nostril with a pre-filled delivery device that delivers a single dose upon activation. This less invasive technique is less challenging to administer for non-medical personnel and also has less known possible side effects and complications. As we've all learned, the production of insulin and glucagon are like a seesaw with continuous movement up and down. Our dietary goal, ideally, is to create stability and balance. To stimulate the production of glucagon through diet alone, you have to reduce your overall intake of carbs. And when you do eat them, try and eat carbs that are unrefined, crude, and low on the glycemic index. What kind of carbs? Well, yams, black rice, lentils, beans, you know, low glycemic slow releasers. Try and keep your carbs under 40 on the GI index, right? The glycemic index is high, medium, and low. Try and keep it at the low bottom of medium down to low. The lower, the better. Of course, there's another important step required if your goal is to crank up glucagon. In addition to reducing your intake of carbs, eat plenty of high-quality, non-denatured protein. Keep the CHI prime directive in mind here. Supply your biological demand. Four words. Protein directly stimulates the production of glucagon and through special chemical messengers sends signals throughout the entire body that it's time to trim down the sails and utilize body fat as a fuel source. That's a good thing. Protein, especially when combined naturally with healthy anti-inflammatory fats like grass-fed New Zealand lamb, or swordfish caught locally and served fresh in Sicily. When we were in Sicily recently, I think I ate swordfish every day. It's absolutely delicious, and what a great friend to the athlete this food is. A nice piece of correctly prepared wild tissue protein is ideal, and there are many, many to choose from, whether it's from land or sea. Take your pick. So let's summarize. The pancreas releases glucagon when the concentration of glucose in the bloodstream falls too low. Glucagon causes the liver to convert stored glycogen into glucose, into simple sugar, blood sugar. Glucagon regulates the rate of glucose production through lipolysis. Now, let's break that word down, lipolysis. It's a key word. You need to know what this word means. Think of lip or lipid as fat, okay? So lipolysis, lip, is fat, and lysis as the disintegration of something. So lipolysis is the disintegration of fat, the breakdown of fat. The net effect of lipolysis is an increase in fatty acid metabolism. Now, to this add some sport, a sport you love and enjoy that you can train for, and plenty of movement and exercise and motion. And if you do, the effect is now squared. H equals NF squared, the CHI equation for health. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from 16th century English writer Isaac Walton. Angling may be said to be so like the mathematics that it can never be fully learned.